Okay, so I want to talk about why MGTOW men should be positive in their private lives. Now you will notice that I made the distinction for doing it with your private life. The reason for that should soon become clear, but we can't get there without first talking about the purpose of negativity. Negativity does have a function. Oftentimes, the function is to be a corrective force for an immediate threat. For instance, if you have to kill a home invader, your immediate thought process is not going to be, "Oh, you know me, I'm all cuddles." And this obviously would extend into military application as well. In a kill or be killed scenario, you're absolutely going to insert negativity into the world. And in fact, your survival would hinge on doing exactly that. So it becomes clear then that denouncing negativity in a blanket fashion is incorrect. So the focus then shifts to when and where. Now we know from studies done related to the workforce that stress, specifically long-term stress, reduces health and lifespan. And at this point in the talk, I have two vectors to explore. I have to talk about why health and lifespan are important as it relates to MGTOW philosophy, and I have to explore when and where negativity should be used. Let's explore the latter first, of when and where. Now obviously you don't want to be negative all the time because you'll wall yourself out, rapidly aging as a result of exposure from the dark side, like the Emperor from Star Wars. But we are fighting an unconventional war here. And being that we are in the defensive position, we have the moral high ground by default. So we shouldn't be inducing our own stress from a concern about immorality. Now I will segue briefly here because we do have to acknowledge that there are religious men within MGTOW, and morality does seem to be a concern among them. Now I did a brief video about a pastor who is demonizing MGTOW. He very brazenly declared that members within MGTOW were wicked. And for men who take the religion seriously, this can be stress-inducing. That is, stress-inducing out of a fear of corruption of morals. I've done some thinking on this matter since the video I made, and I thought maybe I could throw a bone to the religious MGTOW guys. In many legal codes is the understanding of duress, and duress more or less shifts the responsibility when the circumstances at play are not the result of your own doing. This specifically occurs when circumstances prevent you from acting in a way that you otherwise would, or force you to act in a way that you otherwise wouldn't. So if you steal a Ferrari, it's Grand Theft Auto. But if you steal a Ferrari because your family's being held hostage, and that's what their demands are, you are now considered to be under duress, and the theft and the Grand Theft Auto charge is shifted to the people holding your family hostage. Now the way in which this relates to religious texts is pretty simple. In religious text, there were almost unenumerable amounts of people put into prison as a result of their religious faith. This prohibited these individuals from engaging in religious ceremonies, thereby forcing them to sin by default. When pressed on this matter, and is as evident from the texts themselves, many people of faith are quick to point out that God understands duress. That is, if a man can understand the shifting of blame as a result of duress from circumstances, then God does too. And in fact, I cannot think of a single instance, at least from the text that I've seen anyway, that state, imply, or demonstrate any sort of divine punishment leveled against an individual as a result of being forced into sin by a third party. So even if you can make the stretch to say that certain activities that you might be engaging in or forced to engage in within MGTOW are sinful, and the big one everyone goes to is masturbation, you first have to reconcile this with the concept of duress. And given that in the old religious texts, the prisons were a function of a state, we don't have to make a grand leap to point out all the threats that the state makes today. So if you're stuck in a moral quandary about MGTOW as it relates to your faith, I would ask you to answer the following question. Is the behavior of the state causing you to act in a way that you otherwise wouldn't, or causing you to not act in a way that you otherwise would? Because if so, the definition of duress now applies. Now, I'm not religious, but I do find myself getting indignant about the fact that a man would verbally crucify people that are under duress while simultaneously not saying a single thing to the individuals that are complicit in the cause. He condemned feminism in the abstract sense, but made no statements telling the women to vote away the judiciary. And if he keeps it up, I may feel compelled to go full nuclear. Now, I know that some of my listeners may not be religious. In fact, many of them may not be religious. However, this information could help you to help the brothers. So if you come across a religious MGTOW that is in a moral quandary, you have the advantage of being able to point to duress. Now, there are some reasons that I have made this segue. First, it should remove some stress as it relates to morality from the religious MGTOW men. And second, it gives an example of when it might be a good time to insert negativity into the centralized platform known as YouTube. So if I have to condemn a preacher for his inability to stay in line with his own religious text, at that point, the negativity is being used as a corrective force in the battlefield of thoughts. So, the negativity is serving a positive function at that point. But, it does not mean that I'm walking around in a state of anger about a YouTube preacher all day. All it means is I take the righteous anger, condense it into a little ball, aim it, and fire it. After that point, being continually angry would provide no net gain. In fact, it very likely provides a net loss. I share the methods that I use, hoping that it might contribute to the health of all of you. Now, you might think that I just said that all YouTube content should be negative. This would be an incorrect conclusion, and I can go back to the warfare example to demonstrate why. In most modern warfare, there is a section that is usually dedicated to code breaking. Being in a bad mood all day does not contribute to successfully breaking codes. Codes will not be broken if you're really, really angry at them. And in fact, it could be argued that positivity and optimism are more likely to make you a successful code breaker. That is, the thrill of breaking a code that nobody else has yet. So it reveals itself then that both positivity and negativity have a place in the battle space. This is why I do not rag on content producers that follow one format or the other. The guys that are mean, I'm not going to tell to be nicer, out of a fear that I might catch the negativity virus, because honestly, things are that bad, and the insanity needs to be put on full display and paraded around until everyone's seen the parade. I'm also not going to rag on the positive guys, because we need the code breakers, and that format helps us reach more people. Okay, so we've covered when and where and why, and we've covered the fact that social media platforms are the battle space, so we can't pontificate about content producers producing negative content. Totally fine by me. So let's talk about why health and lifespan are important as it relates to MGTOW philosophy. Now, this might be more specific to content producers, but I would hope that it extends to every man in MGTOW. So one of the primary reasons that MGTOW exists is because previous generations stood back and just let shit happen. That includes not informing the younger generations of the risks. In other words, a failure to pass along truth. And I don't think it's a stretch for me to say that core MGTOW philosophy is truth absolutist. I also don't think it's a stretch for me to say that a large contributing factor to that is that the previous generation was not. So the long and short of what I'm saying is that any red pill man that has no interest in passing the information along is bordering on total hypocrisy. So if we agree then that logic and reason are the most important things, and that passing along the information is a requisite almost by definition if you're a content producer, then this brings your health and lifespan into proper focus. That is, you want to reach the most people over the longest amount of time with the most potent logic and reason that you possibly can. And this pairs nicely with the survival data that we were talking about in previous videos. You don't survive merely for survival's sake. You survive because there's a mission, and dependencies on third parties jeopardizes that mission, and you need not necessarily have any lofty goals in mind. If you resign yourself to the role of, say, a time capsule, you still serve a very important function. And unlike a time capsule, you can actually insert yourself into the narrative and argue with people, maybe preventing a historical repeat in the process. If that's all you ever accomplish, it could be beneficial to the lives of every generation that comes afterward. So let's talk about cognitive potency first. So I had seen a study a while back that said neural activity in the brain slows down when plaque builds up, and that is in fact just like it sounds. Plaque. Brain plaque. Curiously enough, I guess it's the same type of plaque that builds up on teeth. So you should understand a little bit how the brain works. If you think of the brain like a web, then you have the basic idea. Pockets of information connected together one link at a time. Plaque builds up on the connective tissue between these points, and that can actually slow down or stop neurons from getting from point A to point B. So if you find that some days you have a cloudy thought process, this could be why. And as a matter of fact, they find that in Alzheimer's patients, there's a lot of buildup. So Alzheimer's would more or less show the advanced version of letting plaque buildup get too far. Curiously, one of the easiest ways to break the plaque off the connective tissue in the brain is cardio workouts. From what I understand, the increased blood pressure is supposed to shake out the dust, more or less. So while some may think of cardio and washboard abs as only for the purposes of attracting a mate, or for the purposes of just feeling a little better, the truth of the matter is that there's a direct link between working out and cognitive potency. And that's before restating the obvious that it's likely to cause you to live longer. So it follows naturally that if we value logic and reason, and we value passing along logic and reason, we are effectively required to work out. In fact, making the choice not to work out would be to say that we're MGTOW and we value logic and reason, just not that much. Or we value logic and reason and passing the information along, but not enough to update our lifestyle choices. Or we value logic and reason and passing the information along, but not enough to get off our ass. And when you combine this with the fact that there's probably going to be a lot of feminists that want to see walled out MGTOW men, that kind of reinforces the veracity of the point. Now this isn't me telling you what to do, but this is where the logic follows. So the next thing I rolled up on, following the logic naturally, was thinking about any existential risks that would threaten logic and reason, and or threaten passing that information along. I can almost hear the kid in the back of the class now waving his hand around wildly going, "Ooh, I know, it's feminism. Feminism threatens logic and reason in passing the information along." Yes, Johnny, very good, you get a gold star. But, aside from the obvious one there, next comes deplatforming, but that's not so scary because we just move like hermit crabs to another platform. So I started thinking about this on the scale of mass extinction. This is where people usually tap the mat, but not me, so it should go without saying that valuing logic and reason and desiring to pass that logic and reason along are set in opposition to mass extinction. That is, mass extinction would invalidate the function of valuing logic and reason, and it would invalidate the value of passing logic and reason along. Based on this, I have to conclude that mass extinction should be firmly opposed. Now, there are some that want to see the world burn, and given the context of current society, I totally understand what they're saying, and I have no problems with seeing the current culture burn itself to the ground. However, there is a distinct difference between a culture imploding due to its own corruption and a mass extinction event. These two can coincide somewhat, and it's possible that a corrupt culture could actually set off a mass extinction event, but any link in probabilities there would be a weak one. This got me looking at mass extinction events in isolation, and specifically their probabilities. I immediately remembered a slide from Wikipedia that I saw when I was studying probabilities for business. The slide was a stab at measuring global catastrophic risk on a level of human extinction, specifically the probability of human extinction prior to the year 2100. Now, before I go into this, there is some established precedent with making predictions about the future. The precedent is that you can know probabilities of an event occurring, but you can't know exactly when, and our ability to effectively project tends to extend to about 1 year out. Beyond that, specific projections become very difficult, as the many unknowns that can form and compound make the prediction very shaky. So the closer the event is to occurring, the fewer unknowns. So if I'm to compare events that are likely to happen within the next year, I can effectively rank them as such. But I would have to keep updating the projection as the conditions changed. This is where people screw up in the investment world. They put money behind something and consider it final. They view updating their position on something in light of new data as failure of their previous decision. In reality, the only failure would be to not update your position based on new data. So what I just described about projecting 1 year out is for one type of events. Maybe these are businesses trying to get things done within the next 9 months, that sort of thing. Now the next type of event has no specific timeline, but we can compare it relative to something else. For instance, I could say that a MGTOW man is way less likely to get screwed over in divorce court when compared to a married man, and that probability would hold without needing to give a firm timeline or date to prove it out. So, this idea of measuring global catastrophic risk before a very specific year combines all the worst elements you could get in projecting the future. Not only are the factors complex, but the date is well past 1 year away. Regardless, it gives us a peek into the minds of the experts in these areas that are trying to rank the probabilities of a catastrophic event relative to another one. They were very loud about the fact that they didn't like to project something this complex that far into the future. Regardless, they tried to help with the intent of the survey anyway, and give it the old college try. And the results of the survey kind of astonished me. People are always worried about nuclear war, or nuclear terrorism even, but those ranked very, very low according to the experts. Now I have to laugh how they have their chart categorized from left to right, because the words they use literally are imperceptible, endurable, terminal, and hellish. According to the expert spitballing, the number one threat to the future of humanity is molecular nanotechnology weapons. In other words, programmable little robots that can pass through your skin because they're so tiny. So imagine infecting an entire world population with nanotechnology bots and flipping a switch that kills everybody based on their GPS location. More effective than a nuclear weapon and less messy. They have super intelligent AI ranked as a close second. That's followed by non-nuclear wars, engineered pandemics, nuclear wars, nanotechnology accidents, natural pandemic, and nuclear terrorism down at the bottom. And apparently nuclear wars are 33 times more likely than nuclear terrorism. That's code speak for the governments of the world are at least 33 times more dangerous than the random nutcase. Keep that in mind the next time a nutcase kills people and the government spends 2 weeks aiming a camera at it, convincing everybody to give up their rights to the government. Just a thought for you. So, the overall probability, according to the smart guy spitballing, is 19% chance of human extinction before the year 2100. Now, the fact that they're spitballing makes me very uncomfortable here. It makes me uncomfortable because they're using present data, and present times are actually relatively stable in terms of catastrophic risk. There haven't been full-out nuclear or nano wars yet, and yet the probability comes out that high, like they're happening every other weekend or something. This leads me to believe that I'm greatly underestimating the probability of total human extinction. Now, this is where I start to feel boxed in. A human extinction event necessitates a drop in the number of living humans. I then have to consider the fact that artificial methods for reproduction, which would get the numbers back up, require infrastructure and have not yet been finalized. Now, we've already asserted previously in this video that logic and reason good, passing logic and reason forward also good, human extinction bad. Not only would an extinction event invalidate my efforts, it would invalidate the efforts of all the men that have come before me for thousands of years. So now I have to think about the fact that if I prepare well enough, and I happen, through accident maybe even, to be a living human being of potentially the few left, and given a scenario where I was unable to reproduce with technology, and given the absence of some other technology, like maybe time stasis or something, so I could just sleep into the future, I would be forced to concede to the default way in which human beings are created, perhaps grudgingly so, but that's where the logic goes in that specific case. I mean, the future of intelligence might be hinging on it, so no pressure or anything. Find a youngish female of the highest possible IQ that I can find, and combat the stupidity of the situation the old-fashioned way. I don't really like the idea of saddling another human being with that kind of responsibility, that is, the child, but if all other options are closed, my hand would be forced through logic. The religious types would probably say at this point that God has a sense of humor, a MGTOW forced to seek out a woman to breed with. But hey, at least there's no state, right? Silver lining, I guess. Now, prior to going through these doors of thought, I was dead set on getting a vasectomy. But given the apparently stupidly high probability of human extinction, I'm almost logically forced to not. And I have absolutely no internal natural desire for children either. The only way to get me there is through logic, and there are a lot of conditions strung together to get me to that point. So hopefully, even with me pushing to live as long as possible, everyone else will keep working at humping us away from extinction. Then I don't gotta worry about it. Do me a solid, though, guys, and quit supporting governments, especially with tax money, that are building mass extinction weapons. Think about it. I might end up having to breed the old-fashioned way if you keep it up, all forcing me to take one for the team and everything. No matter how you fold this, it's gonna be the future or bust.